Welcome to the CEN show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Roski Mascani, and on the panel this evening, we have Sister Sophia, we have Professor Amin Ra, and Brother Ahi. Our guest for this evening is Dr. Inky Real. Dr. Inky Real has been with us previously about three times, and Miss Sophia brought him to us, which I'm grateful for her for doing that. Dr. Inky, would you like to tell us a little bit more about yourself? And our topic tonight is religion and health. So we can get started, and you can tell us a little bit about what you got going on and a little bit about yourself, and we can get started with the topic.
All right. My name is Dr. Inky. I'm a certified naturopath. So that's where the doctor is from. I'm not a medical doctor or surgeon. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I'm a certified master herbalist, a certified personal trainer, a certified sports nutritionist. There's a few more of them in there. Certified elite calisthenics specialist, father of 10, author. We've written, want to say, probably close to 130 books right now. Maybe about 80 of them are on Amazon, or 70, somewhere in that number. 70 or 80 books are on Amazon. I consider myself a one of one. What I try to do is take, I try to bring what our ancestors did up to what we have going on to give, I wouldn't even say credence, because if I was to say, to give credence to what the ancestors did by what we got going on nowadays. When I say us, I mean like modern science. For me, that would be disrespectful to the ancestors. So I just say, I try to use what we have going on now to help reach people. So, sort of like putting the worm on the hook, because I know the way people's minds are trained now, it's hard for them to, even our own people, it's hard for them to understand the level of greatness that we attained 2,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years ago. So, it's more than just trying to heal or teach people how to heal, because that's a temporary thing. My goal is more so to change the world, to change the landscape, and to do that, you kind of gotta undo some of the brainwashing and really get to some of the roots of what we have going on today, so we could tie that back into what the ancestors left us. And so far we've been doing a lot. So far we've been doing a lot. We've been making a lot of headway. It's been a journey, but we still toeing the line.
That's a very interesting background, and we've had you before, and we showed your website. We showed some of your books, and I know you got a very rich history. So when it comes to health and religion, which is the topic, what do you want to convey to us about those two very broad terms there? So what you want to convey to us this evening? Because they could, I mean, we could come from many angles when it comes to health and religion. And I guess, how would you tie those two? How would you tie those two together?
Okay, great.
Or do they have a connection, a direct connection?
That right there. Literally, what you're asking is like, that's what we live for. That's the main, that's a part of our main agenda. A part of our main agenda is to be able to answer that question. So to jump right into it, when we go back, right, if we go back to our heyday, right, our heyday is our comedic roots, right? That's our heyday. That's when we gave the world math and science. A big problem with us seeing us as we are today, and then us visualizing our ancestors from that time period, is that we have a lot of similar things, right? A lot of similar things, like our postal system, how we have supermarkets and stores all over the place. Back in Kemet, they had the post office running. They had regular mail. They had express mail. They had the markets booming all over the place. You know, they didn't have money, but they had Deben, which was a measure. So instead of using an actual thing for money, they had a measure for money. And so, you know, you could use copper or silver or whatever it was that you had going on. But there was a lot of things that were similar. But certain things, if we put a word to them, it creates a distorted view because their idea, their perspective wasn't the same. So for instance, today, our religion is based on, and when I say our religion today, I'm not speaking to the outskirts, just so we can, you know, for the next 45 minutes to an hour, you know, I just want people to know I'm not speaking to the outskirts. I'm speaking to the Israelites. I'm speaking to the Christians. I'm speaking to the Catholics. I'm speaking to the Jewish folks. I'm speaking to the Muslims, you know, Seventh-day Adventists, Baptists. I'm speaking to the Bible people and the people of the Quran, Old Testament, New Testament, all of those different derivatives and variations, because, you know, we forget in our zealousness that Muhammad was not a Muslim. Muhammad, that quote unquote received the Quran, he was not a Muslim. Islam started after that. So when he received his message, quote unquote, if we believe in that scripture, when he received that message, he wasn't a Muslim at that time. He wasn't a practicing Muslim because no such thing existed.
Quick question, Dr. Inky.
Yes, sir.
Would that be true for Jesus, that Jesus wasn't a Christian?
Absolutely. That would not only be true that Jesus wasn't a Christian, but that would be true that John wasn't a Baptist. That would be true that Mary wasn't a Catholic, right? So we have to understand that 4,000 years ago, not even 2,000, Muhammad, we're talking about 1,500 years ago, roughly. Jesus in that era, we're talking about 2,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago. 4,000 years ago, the concept of religion was vastly different. Today, it's about an unknowable God, and it's about taking a lot of things on a belief system that you can't necessarily verify to yourself, or you don't necessarily have a system of verification. In that time period, it was different. In that time period, God was very knowable because the concept of God was different. So God today, the term is a watered down Greco-Roman term that got solidified by the Germans. And so we have the German word God, and that is more so a anthropomorphized, you know, where you get the old chubby white guy that lives in the clouds. That's kind of that concept. When you go back to the Netcher or the Netcheru, what you're talking about is the universal forces that are much more in alignment with modern science. Modern science today is a lot closer to what religion was 4,000 years ago. So religion then was about understanding the forces that animate life. Though that's how you got to know God. You got to know God through understanding nature, through shape, through number, through geometry, by understanding light, by understanding magnetism, by understanding water, by understanding what creates an atmosphere or lightning. That was the concept then. The church kind of gave us a distorted view of that. And the distorted view of that, and I don't mean the modern church, I mean the early church, I mean the Inquisition church, I mean the first 500 to 1,000 years of popedom, vastly different than what we know of now, because you know, even Peter, you know, Peter believed in it. Just we'll just say it's different. We'll just say it's different, right? So I have to lay this groundwork, because if we don't get the idea that the perspectives are different, then we won't be able to see where we get off track, right? And so everything that had to do with God had to do with life. Everything that had to do with God had to do with life. It was about what animated life, what created life, what sustained life. But in a very real, analyzable sense, nowadays, if you go through the Bible, if you go into the Quran, you have a few laws. You have a few laws on dietary regimen that, respectfully, most people don't understand. And when it comes to the Bible specifically, a lot of people believe that the New Testament freed them from the law of the Old Testament. So even the dietary laws no longer apply to them. And that's just vastly different than what the original concepts of what religion was. And buried in the Bible, buried in the Quran, are remnants of those old traditions, of those original teachings, where your way to understand God, your way to praise God, your way to unite with God is actually through your body. It's through your health. It's through how you take care of yourself, how you take care of Him. If your body is God's temple, how you take care of you is how you take care of Him or her, however you identify God. So,
okay, Dr. Inka, we already got some questions coming your way.
Yes, sir.
So, that was so if I'm listening to what you're saying that the religions today are like scraps of what it used to be or what it was meant to be. Sort of like the scraps, the leftover.
That's a rougher way to say it, but that's we on the same page though. That's just a rougher way to say it. I would probably put a little bit more honey on it, maybe put a little strawberry on the side of it, but that's, yeah, we on the same page.
That was a thought. So Brother Ahi had a question for you. Go ahead, Brother Ahi.
Dude, in the
more ancient Christians, did they take the stories literally? Like the burning bush and those type of things, did they take those stories literally? Like today's, these Christians, they on some thing where they take everything literally. Like,
I'm a disagree, but I'm a agree at the same time. I'm gonna say these Christians today, with respect, I would say a lot of Christians. I'm gonna say a lot of Christians, so we don't classify everybody. I'm gonna say a lot of Christians today. Just like, no, I'm gonna say a lot of religious people today, because it'd be unfair for us to say the Christians, because it's everybody, really. Most people are out here fraud. That's just all that is. They're frauding. So they would like people to think that they're taking their scripture so serious that they're treating everything as if it's literal. But all you have to do is go with them to the supermarket one time to see that they're not taking their scripture literal. That goes right out of the window. If you go to the restaurant with them one time and see what they order, you know they're not taking that scripture literal. Not the Old Testament, not the New Testament, not the Quran. So when you start to challenge them with things that, you know, people like to perpetrate the fraud. They want to seem like, you know, they're very serious about their religion, whatever that is. But religion, unfortunately for 90% of the people out there, is not stronger than their addictions. And so the addictions, regardless to what they are, whether it's alcohol, whether it's, I was having a debate back and forth on the internet with a brother, right? You know, he's supposed to be a Muslim. And at the same time as he's a Muslim, he's talking about selling drugs and, you know, he's pushing his rap album. And the whole time I'm laughing in my mind because I know it's not possible for you to be a Muslim and also rap. Because rap goes against the Muslim. You cannot be a Muslim. So like, for instance, all these rappers that are taking their Shahada, oh, I'm taking my Shahada and, you know, my album come out next month. Like, that's not possible. That's a fraud. That's a marketing gimmick. You can't be a Muslim and a rapper at the same time. That's not even a... So most people would think I was going to say, you can't be a drug dealer at the same time as a Muslim. No. That's just on Front Street. That's super obvious. But no, the whole concept of rap goes against the Islamic culture. So, you know, and it's just, I'm not just, you know, just attacking the Muslims, but I mean, it's just people's personal addictions, the things that they like, they will choose to continue. Okay, I'm doing this, but I'm also that. So even though I'm going to ignore the dietary regimen, I'm still a Jewish person. You know, I'm just not that, you know, I'm just not that religious, but I'm definitely Jewish. Or I'm not that religious, but I'm definitely a Christian. Or, you know, like, so nobody really takes their thing literally right up until the point where they're challenged and they're trying to prove on a surface level, oh, I'm serious with this. You know, I tithe this amount of tithes, or I've been to church 51 out of the last 52 weeks of the year, or something like that. But they don't really take the scripture serious at all. And if we're going back to the origin of the Bible per se, the Bible was written under threat, duress, and coercion. So it's 99% of the people that are even into the Bible don't know what the Bible is. So they can't begin to understand the book because they don't know the inception of the book. So the inception of the book, you have to go back to Kemet. You would have to go back to the time period that Kemet had, where, you know, they're sitting on top of the world. They're sitting on top of the water. They're sitting on top of gold. They're sitting on top of herbs and medicine, where nobody else has herbs and medicine. Forget about the money. They're sitting on herbs and medicine in a time period where nobody has herbs and medicine. Nobody. Nobody has medicine. Medicine is a concept that only exists in Kemet. Like, I don't even think people can understand that. The closest thing we could get to understanding living in a world where no one even knows what medicine is, except us one country or one city, is like watching like maybe Mad Max and the Thunderdome or one of these end of the world time movies where like, that's that world. There was no such thing as medicine anywhere else. Nobody had no idea what that was. Nobody knew how to like cut open a tumor and remove cancer and suture it up and sanitize it and disinfect it. And like that had to look like pure magic 4,000 years ago. It looks like magic today, to be honest. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you're going on 4,000 years ago, people didn't, it just, so people had to, like, it's just the law of the land. People had to, put their life on the line to invade Kemet, run down on Kemet, colonize, conquer, do whatever, because like anybody else, we taking care of our own. You know what I'm saying? If you want to come in and enjoy something, you gotta pay what you got to offer. And we got a lot. So what you got to offer gotta be something I don't have. Or else, I don't know what to tell you. So, I understand why the other cultures began to, form armies and come in, but and that's what sets the precursor for the Bible. The constant invasions and invasions of Kemet. That leads to a place where foreign rulership is happening all too often. And Kemet just gets beat down and beat down and beat down to the point where the Persians then overran them. And so they go to their neighbor that they've been feeding. They've been taking care of, shooting them a little herbs, shooting them a little wisdom. They go to their neighbors like, look, we need y'all to help us out with these Persians. And so the neighbor's like, all right, cool, don't worry about it. Take me through your city and show me where the Persian strongholds are and where your security is, and we're gonna beef it up. Don't worry about it. We got you. Don't worry about nothing. We got you. And so they go ahead and they let Alexander come on in, and they show Alexander, look, we weak right here. And we weak right here. So go ahead and set up your teams right here in these areas where we weak at. And so they turn around and they done allowed Alexander to set up and position himself in everywhere that, Kemet was weak at. And Alexander said, listen, man, just go on ahead and take that crown off, man. Listen, we don't want to do it to you, man. We got a lot of respect for y'all, but we got to have it. So this is how Alexander the Great takes over Kemet. Without even the military campaign, he didn't like when we say conquered, like Greece conquered Kemet. That is true, but it's not true because it wasn't a conquer, it wasn't a campaign. We asked them for help against Persia and turn around, and he just used that as an opportunity to set his troops up. And once they were set up, they were set up. It was a wrap. We had to go on ahead and turn that thing over. And that's how it was until Alexander passed, and then Ptolemies and that family came into power, and they took the priesthood from the Elephantine Island, and they had the priesthood, write the Septuagint. And so that's the early inception of a Bible. They wrote that. They wrote the Bible under threat, duress, and coercion. So that wasn't what people think it is, where they think, oh, this was a divine revelation and they wrote this, for the world to be like, that's not what that is. That they wrote that under threat, duress, and coercion. That wasn't something they wrote for the people. That was a part of like a Rosetta Stone, if you will. That was a Rosetta Stone of Kemetic traditions. So if you walk through the Bible is full of Kemetic traditions. Even the circumcision, the Passover, the burial process, the embalming process, how they buried Joseph, and all of those things are Kemetic tradition. So, you know, that's all that was. That just was a Rosetta Stone. So, you know, that's why the New Testament was necessary. The New Testament was necessary because the Greek people needed more of their tradition to be there. So this is why Yahshua becomes Jesus, you know, because they got to stick Zeus in the mix.
So, Dr. Inky,
yeah,
let me get to a couple of more of the panel, and so they can kind of ask you questions or have a comment about what you said. Because we've had guests on before that spoke about the Bible and how it was formed and everything. So I'm gonna go to Professor Rye. Professor Rye.
Yeah.
Question or comment?
Like, I appreciate what you've been saying, if I understand correctly. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on to the show and giving us your wealth of knowledge and information. Hopefully you make us better people.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, sir. When it comes to religion and nutrition, or religion and eating, some of those organized worship groups, such as Muslims and Christians, because that's what religion means, organized worship, they like Muslims deal with halal chicken, and you know you don't eat the blood or something, and then Jewish people have their diets, Christians have their concepts of meals, and like you said, you know, people of course don't abide by it. They don't even abide by the tenets or their scriptures. Most people don't, because they're just stories, you know. But one of the challenges is, how do you, if you can't tell people where life began and where it ends, and if there's an afterlife, that's why they, you know, first of all, you know, as you know, all those religions made people join them or kill them. You know, Christianity, Judaism, Islam. They were really gangs.
It spread by the, you know, by the sword.
Organized right. Gangs under the auspices of religion. But my point, my question to you is that one of the challenges you find in challenging anybody who say they're religious or spiritually inclined is that many people can't say where life came from. Even if you say evolution, they say, well, God created evolution, you know, and you say, well, there's other planets, but God, that was included in the earth. That's what the sun and the moon is all about, other planets. And so they always have an answer. And as you were saying about ancient Egypt, people had belief systems before Egypt, before Kemet. You know, animism and celestial gods, lunar gods. And then it was the Europeans that brought in spiritual gods, because they used to refer to deification, if I'm not mistaken. If you had a lot of knowledge and wisdom, they deified you. Like, that's like people go to school to get a degree, and they get a doctorate, a BA, and all that for their knowledge, study. There are people that study nature, study life, and became very wise, and they deified them as gods. I think Imhotep was deified, and Akhenaten. Most ancient African people, gods walked around on earth. Yeah, you know, but now the European came in with a spiritual God that you can't challenge. You understand? You can challenge the people power.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I got you.
And so my question to you is, What do nutrition have to do with regards to religion when, in the Bible they talk about the burnt lambs and God, Jesus said, in the First Testament, it smells good and, sacrificing lambs and sacrificing cows and stuff like that. How does that go?
So here's where the problem comes in. The problem comes in because it's like and I was live on my channel, last week, and I was kind of having a similar conversation. And I asked the question to the people, right? And the question I asked is, how can a tree grow with no roots? How can a tree grow with no roots, if at all, is going to be sickly, physically or mentally, if at all, right? It's a withering tree, it's dying, it's on life support. And so when you look at religion today and spirituality, it's withering, dying, and on life support because the roots are gone. So when you go into the Bible has very solid ideas on eating. The science is solid. The problem is, for the religious mind, everything has to come from the text. And so they cut off the idea that the text has an origin. And when you look at just the body of work in and of itself, you have a dietary regimen, but you don't have any science of the human body to validate it. So people that are trapped inside the book and they're not looking for information outside the book, they won't be able to understand what's in the book. So I'll give you an example. Genesis first chapter. Genesis first chapter and Revelation, last chapter, the alpha and omega of the book, the first chapter and the last chapter tell you everything. First chapter tells you basically the plants, the fruits, the herbs. That's for you. That's your diet right there. Now, what happens is you fast forward a few chapters and you go through some situations, right? There's a flood, people get trapped in the wilderness. And so coming out of the flood, people lost in the wilderness. God passes a law and says, hey, listen, you can eat some animals. Here are the clean animals. Here are the dirty animals. Now, again, the book has no teaching on anatomy, it doesn't teach you about how the body works. It just gives you do's and don'ts. So it's incumbent upon you to figure out, to figure out. But people don't do that.
One of those
So
podcasts that Jason never get on
what happens is,
the
when you look at the clean animals are all plant-eating animals. The dirty animals are all animals that eat other animals. Right then and there, that speaks volumes because we are also animals. So that means if you want to be a clean animal, then you need to be an animal that eats plants. Because if you are an animal that eats animals, you'll be a dirty animal. Now, the thing that study would tell us in that space is it's not possible for us to be a vegan or a vegetarian coming out of a flood because we're in a foreign land. We're in a place that we're not familiar with. You can't eat the plants because the plants are poisonous. There's just as many toxic, poisonous plants that will kill you in nature as there are nutritious ones, maybe even more, maybe more toxic plants than nutritious ones. So you can't just, like a lot of people, they fall victim to marketing. They put natural, 100% natural on the package. So that means they think that that means it's healthy. Just because it's natural does not mean it's healthy. So you can't be in a new place and just all of a sudden start eating plants. That's a recipe for disaster. So the way you learn which plants are okay for you to eat in nature is by tracking, hunting, and stalking the animals. And while you're tracking, hunting, and stalking the animals, you're going to stay alive because you're going to eat them. And as you're learning them, learning their habitats, watching which plants they avoid, watching which plants they eat, now you'll be able to start learning a whole new apothecary. You'll be able to, okay, these are good right here. These are good greens. These are good berries. Don't eat those. Rub those on yourself if you get an infection. Stay away from that. You're going to get, you know, poison ivy or skin something. Like, you'll be able to learn what's going on around you and then get back to a more healthier space. You got to start from the bottom and learn, you know. So as you move through the Bible, though, people just get to this idea of grace where they feel like grace allowed them to just do anything. And so the concept, you know, that most people are walking around that follow the Bible and follow the idea of grace is God created a son. God killed his son so that they would be able to not follow any of the rules that he made in the first place. I'm like, that is a wild concept. Like, to think that God gave you rules, then God had a son and killed his son so that you could stop following his rule. Like, that's close to madness. Respectfully, for me, that just doesn't make any sense. I think that grace has a lot more to do with, you know, situations. You know, like there's a situation where Jesus is talking about a guy on the Sabbath. You know, his mule is in the ditch. Does he get his mule out of the ditch or does he leave his mule in the ditch? Situations like that, you know what I'm saying? Like real life kicking in. You may not be able to afford this or that. You might have to do what you got to do at a certain time, or you just may be ignorant of certain information. If you're ignorant of the information, it's not going to be held against you because you didn't know any better at the time. But as you learn better, you do better. And once you learn better, you're responsible to do better. And you're not only responsible to do better, but you're responsible to teach those around you how to do better. So I just think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of ignorance, but, you know, the information is there. You know, people just have to go a little bit further, just go a little bit further to get to it. You know, there's no such thing as abundance of real wealth. Wealth is not material. You know, I have a book series called Generational Health, Generational Health. Because, you know, that's it's not only real wealth, but I think that people are putting the cart before the horse. Time is more valuable than money. And genetics is more valuable than time. And people don't understand that we add information to our genetics every single day. Every single day, we're shaping our genetics. We're shaping our future generations. So you're shaping the next 7, 10, 15 generations by your daily habits. So, you know, what you do every day is a lot bigger than, you know, whether you could get into these pant size or whether you're going to have a six pack or whether you could fit into this outfit or, you know. We just got into this groove where we think about ourselves a lot and we're really focused on ourselves as opposed to, our family, and even further still, our bloodline, our genetic line, the ancestors that came before us, and the progeny that must come after us. I was and I know somebody, I know I'm talking long, but I was talking to a young guy. He goes to my son's high school, and he was joking, because I got a lot of children. He's like, "Man, I don't know how you do it." You know what I'm saying? I don't think I want to have children. I see my mom and dad argue, and I don't know. I don't want to have children. I just want to get rich. And I was like, if your mom or your dad made that decision, you wouldn't exist. How many people you think came before you? He said, "I don't know, maybe 100." I was like, "No, it goes back into a number that we can't even calculate right now, because the more study we do, the more life we find." So anybody along that way could have decided they didn't want to have children, and you wouldn't exist right now. And it's just my opinion, but I think that's an incredibly selfish decision, like to not continue your bloodline. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're here for. So I just think that's something that we have to start doing, and it even shows in other areas of our life in terms of how we document education, how we document our narrative for future generations. We're letting other people create narratives that we raise our children to. Financial planning, the people who are running the world, they make plans 10, 20, 30, 50 generations ahead. We just thinking about ourselves. So a lot of things that we're doing is from a very selfish perspective. And if we step outside that, I think things will open up more and be easier to understand.
Okay, Brother Mashinda, can you unmute?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you have a question or comment for Dr. Inkey?
No, not tonight. Just glad to hear him come, to hear him again, come back to share. Appreciate it. Interesting analysis. And but yeah, I'm traveling right now, and just coming back somewhere. I just chimed in, and I was listening to a portion of it. So, but I don't have any questions tonight. Welcome back, Dr. Inkey. Come back again.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate the opportunity every time.
Great.
So yeah, I think the whole idea of the inception of the relationship of man and creator is about sustaining life and the continuation of life. So the whole natural concept of having a relationship with deity is health. The moment that health becomes separate from your religion or your belief system, your religion or your belief system just fell apart, because there's no reason to have it if it's not about improving quality of life, sustaining life, improving quality of life, then creating a better pattern of living for the future generations. Like, that's literally the root of the relationship that we're supposed to be cultivating with our creators.
That makes sense. Makes sense. Sister Sophia, you want to unmute?
Absolutely.
Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Inkey?
Well, I'm just blown away by the level of knowledge in all the books that the Dr. Inkey's written. And thank you, by the way, for having me on. It's an honor. The work, the level of research and the scientific backing of the work in your book, it's just, it's priceless. And I'm just curious to know, like, are you able to continue doing that so that, more of that information could be passed on to the next generation? But the books are just incredible on Amazon or AmericanHealer.website.
Definitely, definitely. I appreciate the question, and it's insightful. It's like almost like assist. That's a good alley-oop right there. That's a good assist right there, because I wouldn't be able to communicate if I didn't always provide that, you know, because we need that. You know, our folks need that. Even if I take myself out of the picture, we just have a problem respecting and edifying one another. Even before we get to believing one another, trusting one another, we just have a problem with respecting and edifying one another. So you always have to come with the academic reinforcement. And it's crazy because in certain settings, I expect that. Like, it's the norm. If I'm talking in a school, it's the norm. In a school setting, if you're in a college or high school, if you're talking to students in a scholastic academic setting, that's what you do. You give your insight. If it's your firsthand research, you tell people that. If you're referencing somebody else, you tell them that. If you're mixing in your research with somebody else, you know, you. But in spaces where people say, you know, it's just about God's word, they still don't believe you unless you come from a scientific journal. If you're speaking in a alternative news space, or if you're speaking in a anti-establishment militant black space, where they still only listen to that Western European academic, you know. So I just make sure that whatever I'm saying, no matter how foreign it may be, or how strange or how crazy it may sound, I just, you know, I provide those scientific references, articles, journals, quotes, so that people can have the research. You know, I can say, hey, look, you know, this is where it came from in terms of our ancestors. But in order to make it stick, you know, in order to make the meal, you know, nice and heavy for them, you know, you got to put that mashed potatoes on the plate, you know, something that's going to hit them in the gut. And, you know, that's that's the biggest thing that really transformed my speaking. I want to say maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I really started to lean more into that. And now it's just habitual. Anytime, you know, we come with some information, okay, here's what I'm saying, here's my research, here's what the ancestors said, here's what the journals are saying. So that way we know that, okay, cool. And a lot of times what's amazing is that what people don't understand is that our ancestors may have been more advanced than, you know, in their thinking, than what we have currently, you know, because again, perspectives are so different. So the ancient perspective was simplicity. Simplicity was sophistication. Simplicity was advancement. Today, complicated is sophistication. Complicated is advanced. So if you speak and you have great grammar and you use a lot of 10, 12, and 15 letter words, that is a sign of intelligence today. So if you come up to give a lecture to a room of 100 people and you speak, you know, you're very articulate, you use a lot of big vocabulary words, people will, you know, say that was amazing. Now, mind you, out of the 100 people in the audience, maybe 3 or 4 people will know what you're talking about. 95 out of the 100 people will leave that audience knowing nothing more than what they came into that audience with. But you had a great vocabulary and you spoke well, so they will say that you did a great job speaking. If you come into that room, 100 people there, you speak to the 100 people, you use smaller words, you speak like you belong in the audience. Academia will say that you're not that good of a speaker, you need to work on it. But out of that room, 80 to 90 people will have learned more than what they came into that room with, because you spoke to them in a language that you could understand. That's more in tune with what our ancestors was on, because if you could, and that's why we use stories to teach science. We used, what we call today a mnemonic device, then was us just telling a story. And so, you know, the idea was, if you could take complicated science and explain that to a 5-year-old, now you cooking. Now that's intelligence. That's being articulate. If you're telling people you know something, but you can't explain it, and you use a whole bunch of big words, and people are left more confused than before you started talking, that you will be disqualified. So it's just a totally opposite, you know, opposite way of viewing things. And, you know, so I just try to give people the best of both worlds. So that way, wherever they're comfortable, the information is presented in a way where it's like, okay, you know.
So Dr. Enke, was you just talking about basically effective communication?
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Effective communication and, you know, being able to speak to your audience, you know, where they are, and being able to speak in a point where you can simplify concepts as opposed to further complicating concepts that may already be foreign to your audience. Because if they come in to hear you speak, they're not coming to hear you say something they already know. They want you to enlighten them on something. So obviously they're looking for something they don't know. The last thing they want is for you to further complicate a subject that they may just be getting exposed to for the very first time.
Yeah, so, that's a thing of being fundamentally sound. And when students, you know, I've been teaching for years, and Professor Rob been teaching for years, Brother Mashinda been teaching for years. I'm pretty sure he has been teaching, and Sister Sophia. And we always say you assess the situation, you know, your room, you know, when you're coming into a teaching situation. And then you meet them, like Brother Hemrick always say, meet them where they are. And then Professor Rob would also validate that. And you bring them up to where they need to be. And I think what you're conveying is similar to that. And
no, exactly that. Absolutely.
And then Professor Rob always say, and he did, matter of fact, it's going to be in print, and he did a podcast on it, said, don't let your oppressor be your teacher.
Whew.
And so, you know, and I'm listening to you, and I'm hearing these things. I'm hearing these concepts and what you're saying.
That's so powerful right there, because let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, right, because our roots have been cut off, we're looking for spirituality everywhere except for back home. And we don't realize that what we're getting in all these places is watered down versions of the real thing. And I'll give you an example, because I know how y'all keep the time, right? And I know we be coming up on an hour, but you know, I was just having a conversation with, because people know I'm anti-chakras, anti all of these other things. So I was just having a conversation about the tree of life. and the Kabbalah. You know, one of the brothers said, well, you know, I understand your stance on the chakras. You know, at least I'm coming to understand your stance on the chakras. But what about the tree of life? You know, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, hold on. That's taken directly, all these things is taken directly from the older manuscripts. So when you go into the Ebers Papyrus teaches that your body is made out of vessels, vessels called metu. Just like there's a medu, there's a metu, right? And so the difference between metu and medu is internal communication versus external communication. Internal communication was done through the metu. These are conduits throughout your body, tubes. Just the same way we got veins, arteries, nerves. And you had 22 of these vessels. So I'm explaining to the brother, I'm like, you don't know the origin of Kabbalah. You've probably been studying it for a long time. So because you've been studying it for a long time, you feel like you understand it, but you don't, because there's no mention. The first time the word Sephira, which is the circle, there's 10 Sephira in the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life. The first time that's mentioned is in a book called the Sefer Yetzirah. And in the Sefer Yetzirah, it basically ties the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet to the making of the body, to the anatomy. And so you can see, if you know the Kemetic manuscripts, where they literally lifted that right out of the papyri. They lifted that right out of the papyri, right from the 22. But the only difference is, this is something mystical and magical that, you know, you can study forever and it doesn't really amount to anything, versus the metu is talking about blood, lymph, you know, hormones, nerves. Like, this is the system that we use to give the world medicine, to give the world healing, to give the world surgery. So, you know, my thing is, we don't need the kindergarten stuff. We just need to go right to high school, right to college, right to, you know, we need to go right to the real thing, because these ancillary systems aren't going to deal with the problems that we have today, right? There are real solutions to the problems that we're having today that our ancestors time capsuled and left for us. We just got to get to them, share them with each other, and then get busy on using them. So, you know, a lot of people are making a lot of money, you know, keeping the information from us while at the same time utilizing the information for themselves. You know, we hear a lot about, you know, Alexander Fleming and his discovery of antibiotics, but he didn't discover antibiotics. They discovered antibiotics 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. All these guys did was discover papyri. they didn't discover anything. They discovered the discoverers. So, you know, we just got to get back into that pocket, you know, where we understand that we created these things. We created, nobody discovered, Benjamin Franklin didn't discover electricity. You know, like, all of these concepts, you know, from understanding even quantum mechanics, that's a new thing now. That's cutting edge modern science, quantum mechanics. What does quantum mechanics say? Quantum mechanics says that subatomic is the world of waves, and you collapse the waves and particles emerge from the waves. And our world of matter is composed of these particles that emerge from waves. Well, that's literally written on every single piece of papyri, every wall, everywhere, that a tomb emerged from the waves. Like, we, that concept of particles emerging from the waves, that's 6,000 years, like, None of this stuff is new. You know, it's just that, again, we've gotten so, you know, brainwashed that we don't want to hear our thing. We don't even want to put to use our thing. So if we see an atom coming from a wave, we feel like to say that, to teach that, you know, that makes us, you know, we feel pride with being able to say, oh yeah, well, this is quantum mechanics. And, you know, the atom is emerging from the wave. We don't feel that same type of pride by saying our tune is merging from the wave. Subatom is waves. Subatom is waves. Subatom is waves. Atom is how many years old? Atom is how many years old? What, like this? So, and because we had these concepts longer, we've been able to develop them longer and play with them longer and maybe even back away from some things. You know, we have to rationalize the idea that, hey, is anybody noticing this crazy statistic that blind women don't get breast cancer? Blind women don't get breast cancer. Women that live in places with electric light bulbs get cancer 5 to 10, get breast cancer specific, 5 to 10 times more than women in places that don't use light bulbs. And women that are blind, that never, ever look at, you know, that never, ever have this type of light to their eye, they never get it. So we have to look at some of the downsides maybe of our technology. And again, we have to go, everything that's forward may not be an advancement, because that's kind of how technology goes. You learn some stuff, you put some stuff together, you start using it, you know, it's knowledge, it's understanding, then it's wisdom. And in the wisdom space, it's more experience. And unfortunately, we no longer, in the world we live in, we don't have an experience where, you know, companies practice some stuff in a safe setting before they roll it out to the masses. Nowadays, we are the test. So we won't know how certain things have worked until 100 years later, 50 years later, 200 years later. You know, just like in the medicine space, there's a new medicine, an advanced wonder drug. It comes out, it's supposed to be amazing. Then 6 months later, you hear, have you or one of your loved ones used Zilvenadil? If so, you may be liable to call 1-800-I-USE-ZILVENADIL and collect damages, because Zilvenadil wound up causing people to drop dead immediately, blah, 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 blah. Like, we've seen that 1,000 times throughout our lives, and we don't realize that technology is this, is, you know, it can be the same. It can be the same. So, you know, we just got to slow down with how we judge our ancestors versus our modern contemporary ideas.
Well, that point is well taken, Dr. Enke, because when you're living in a lot of artificial constructs, that can be a very unhealthy, you know, to the nature of how we are, how we're put together. But that was a great observation.
I pull that example out because that's one of the things that's like a contention between, you know, Eurocentric scholars and Kemetic scholars. You know, the Kemetic scholars, unfortunately, they don't know enough to understand what they're looking at, but they want to champion the culture. They go, look, we got the Temple of Dendera. You know, there's light bulbs here. Those aren't light bulbs. And then you got the Eurocentric folks that's like, no, that's not anything technological. When I say those are not light bulbs, those are much more advanced than light bulbs. Those are vacuum tubes, right? And a vacuum tube is where you get light bulbs, but it's also where you get cameras, TVs, and all of these different. It's not the one thing. It's the precursor of the everything, right? But when you look at how we're using these things, and this goes into our conversation earlier, how we're using these things, they're not extending life. And it primarily comes out of the concept of atheism that for a long time was the basis of Western science. That those two things had to go together. If you was a, there's a time period where in order for you to qualify as a scientist, you had to not believe in God. You had to denounce God. We don't have a con Our ancestors did not have a concept of no God. Like everything involved God. You had pantheons and levels of different gods. You had gods that were helper gods. Like there was no such as thing as doing something outside of the concept of God. That was crazy. Like so everything was done with reverence for life at number one. Reverence for life at number one was the motive for everything. And that's the thing that's I think that's hurting technology now is because technology is being put together, because we could get this money. This is gonna make a lot of money. We're gonna get rich. This is gonna be amazing. We're gonna make a lot of money off of this. And if we just reverse, if we just realize if a lot of people use it, you're gonna make a lot of money. That's a
Now,
byproduct. But the goal has to be, we're going to help a lot of people with this. We're going to extend life with this. We're going to make life easier with this. And not in a way where it's superficial, right? Because I just released a book called Trigonometry, right? And in the Trigonometry book, I was doing an example of, Egyptian or Kemetic, I should say, Kemetic multiplication. The Kemetic math is different than our concept of math. They have a binary, base two kind of concept of doubling and half in numbers. They do multiplication through addition. They don't do multiplication the way we do it. And so I'm explaining to people when I'm going through this, I said, the multiplication, the math problems take longer to solve this way. But the idea is to build the mind. In today's world, the binary coding exists still. The very same binary coding that our Kemetic ancestors taught every student through school.
You know
They instilled in everybody's mind exists still today, but it exists now in the laptops. It exists now in the cell phone. So now we live in a world where people don't read books anymore. People don't count anymore. So now we in a world today where we want the machine to read to us. People ask me all the time, when are you coming out with audiobooks? I'm never coming out with audiobooks. That goes against my brand. I need you to read these books and get back to the habit of building your mind.
Yeah.
Every time an update come out for your cell phone, you update the software on your cell phone, but you're not updating the software in your brain. So we got updated cell phones and outdated minds, and that's and so that
Dr. Inky, when you're talking, I have like certain points to bring out, like you were talking about the money. And so I say on here quite often, if money is the value, the human is devalued.
Oh man, listen, I got a saying too. My saying is when the checks and balances become the checks and balances, that's when it's over right there. When the checks and balances became the checks and balances, that's when we lost it. The checks and balances was never supposed to be the checks and balances. Once people start validating what they was doing by how much money they was making, it was a wrap.
Yeah. Yeah, but look, we're gonna end it here. You know, lots of good information, you know, good participation. And we just gonna keep doing it. You know, keep doing it again and again and again.
That's it. I appreciate the opportunity. Yep.
And I appreciate you coming, because the more information we can get out that makes sense, that's what we need. We need things to make sense around here. And so appreciate you coming. Appreciate you, Sister Sophia, for coming and advocating for Dr. Inky. Professor Rob,
for having me, and he is a minister. He's an ordained minister as well. So with him talking about religion, he's actually an ordained minister.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, Professor Rob, Brother Mashinda, and Brother Ahi. I'm always glad that you're here. We appreciate your participation, and Professor Rob. Are we going to extend last night's show to next week?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Excellent. So we're going to continue that. And then on next Wednesday, we don't have a show. My guest, I haven't been able to get in contact with. I hope everything is good with her. Her name is Noor Mayat. So hopefully everything is good with her. And so we will hopefully schedule her on a future date. And then in 2 weeks, we have a security group coming on. So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Thanks for everything, everybody. We're going to take our pause. Have a good evening and day.
Thank you.
All right.